developing governance models for those as well. Lawrence is also an advisor to various APBGs, all party parliamentary groups, on blockchain, AI, city, the Crypto Assets Task Force, the World Economic Forum, and also to Alice, the social platform. So, I'm very interested to hear what you have to say, and I'll head over to you.
Thank you very much. That was too kind.
Good. I don't have many slides. I actually did a... That's me, yeah. I did a presentation yesterday without any slides as a test, so that people can actually look at me rather than the screen. But I'm going to talk about a framework, and it's a bit of a visualization, so it's going to be quite useful, I think, to be able to see something on the screen. But I do encourage you to look at me, however much that might be unfortunate.
Can I record your...
Sure. Okay, great stuff. So I'm going to do 15 minutes, and then we're going to go into a panel. So the first thing to say is I think I'm going to bring a very different voice to this event. And I'm always thinking through, as head of research, what the possibilities are. But the most important thing to say is I have a very different objective function than pretty much everyone in this room, in that as essentially an investment firm, as a VC, I have unlimited upside and I have capped downside. And what I mean by that is when I invest in a company, all that can happen is I can lose the money that goes into that business. But that business can be a multi-billion dollar business. So we're incentivized as a firm and in I guess as an industry to incentivize risk taking. And that means we are not incentivized necessarily to be accurate, but we are incentivized is to tell a story and to get people to come to us as an investor, not to go to the next investor. So what that meant is I've been balancing two things. One is academic rigor or being right, and the other is trying to bring a story together that we can sell to potential startups and our investors. So that's why I'm going to show you the future, but it's going to be wrong. I mean, effectively, what I'm trying to do with... there's only five slides, by the way, but this is the one that that we normally put in front of other investors who kind of want simplification. And this is oversimplified, but it actually gets the message across, because we're trying to say what is different. And distributed ledger technologies are a part. They're a new technology. With lots of different aspects to do with, you know, what consensus mechanism is used, what the permissioning is. Ignoring the details for one moment, there is a lot of, I guess, changes, both from a regulatory perspective, but also in terms of cryptographic advancements, a lot of distributed systems advancements, which suggests that we're moving away from a dominant web era, right? So it feels very much like Google, Facebook, and Amazon. As much as they have consolidation of power today, everyone thought the same, Microsoft, SAP, Oracle, for the software era, and before that, a hardware era. We are moving into something that looks different. Whether it's all decentralized is very unlikely. Whether it's all going to be open source, or whether it's all going to be peer-to-peer, aren't really the right questions to ask. What the right questions to ask is, what is different, and will it form a cohesive whole, a cohesive narrative? So what we at Outlier and what I try to do is to say each era, there's four here, but you know, of computing, what you tend to have is an open source innovation. The market goes through the S-curve, you know, from early pioneers through to saturation. And at the sort of saturation point, there's a new break and a new, I hate to use the word, but paradigm shift. Where we move on to the next era. And that's happened a few times, and I make the claim, because as a VC, I'm looking for the next big thing to invest in, we will make the claim that distributed ledger technologies as an open source innovation offer a new platform for innovation that will usher in some form of new era. Whether that's called Web 3.0, whatever it ends up being called, we believe there's something fundamentally different that is enabled through distributed ledger technologies. And so, what we try to do is to say, how do we invest in that amorphous idea of something new? We could just look at every startup that comes across our desk and make a decision on, is this a good team, is this a good product, the traditional way, and decide to invest in the ones that are going to return most capital. We actually decided to do something different, mainly a function of the fact we're a first-time fund, which meant that we can't rely on our brand credibility before. We're not a Sequoia or a Kleiner Perkins. We have to have a differentiated idea to attract good startups and to have a different way of investing. And so we came up with what is essentially a vision of the future, which is called the convergence stack. And it has three layers. I'm going to take you through each in turn. The core idea of it is to try and think through how distributed ledger technologies and other related innovations fit together in a broader macro theme, I guess is the way to describe it. And the easiest way to get that across, the easiest story to tell, is of data lifecycle or data value chain. My marketing head would call it IoT plus blockchain plus AI equals money or success, which is certainly one way of framing it. I'm very keen not to frame it in that way, but it does come across in some of our marketing materials. The way I prefer to frame it is we have a new value chain which incorporates data production, data distribution, and data consumption. Pretty simple. Everyone understands that whenever we make something, whether it's physical or intangible, there is a value chain. There's a creator, there's a way we move it around, and there's a way that that's used. So it's very abstract, very high level, but the point is it's supposed to encapsulate a huge coming Web 3.0. And so it looks a little like this. Well, this isn't all of it. I'm going to talk you through all of it. This is the bottom part. So as I say, at the bottom there's production, then there's distribution, and then there's consumption. So this, I guess, new way of framing it, instead of looking at what market or what use case or what industry, what we actually need to think is much broader. How is data created? And we all know that data is being created, you know, in manifest new ways from new devices, the so-called Internet of Things, which is such a large word as to essentially be meaningless. I mean, the Internet of Things. Any device that has a microprocessor and is connected to the Internet has the ability to collect, as a sensor, data and to put that into a system. And so what we are looking at as investors in that, or of framing, is what can happen at the edge. You know, there is hardware that can process data locally. There's hardware that can store data or private keys locally. And then there's how that hardware is connected and networked with routers and switches. So this whole bottom piece is almost missed in the industry when we talk about distributed ledger technologies. Because at the end of the day, everything is based in hardware. And everything will ultimately feed back to the real world and be connected to the real world. We wanted to make sure that we captured data production. And here we would have sort of, whether it's secure enclaves for hardware processing or SGX from Intel, whatever it looks like, or with hardware storage, it could be Trezor, or any of these companies that are finding ways to locally, at the edge, collect data. And this is the fun stuff. This is what's traditionally thought of as crypto. And the way we view it is ledgers is one important, but one part of a much broader ecosystem of innovation. And that looks like storage, so new types of distributed, decentralized peer-to-peer storage. So a good example of that is IPFS. There's new ways for peer-to-peer networking, so mesh networking at the edge. And then you've got sort of decentralized compute, decentralized databases, decentralized authentication, like the Sovereign Network or UPort. The reason why we've sort of broken this out is to say ledgers are important, absolutely, but the important thing is that we don't just find ourselves siloed talking about one particular technology without putting it in a broader landscape and the broader context of other technologies that are emerging next to it. Because we end up, there's a company called PermaWeb, which announced some fundraising yesterday, I believe, which is essentially a decentralized storage for, to compete with AWS Glacier. It's not really a crypto project, not using a blockchain in any meaningful way. It's a storage business, and its competitor is Amazon Web Services. Should that be seen and just seen there as crypto? No, I think the important thing is it's new information and communication technology, just with a different feature. In this feature, it happens to be decentralized, or I believe more peer-to-peer than decentralized. So it's important to think of this as a larger whole, not as just distributed ledgers, because we end up having very technical conversations, which are important because we have a lot of technical problems to solve. But if we want this to be understood by people outside of the pioneers, then we need to find a way to contextualize it that makes sense to the average person. And at the end of the day, the average user. So the top layer, consumption. So the data's been collected, at the bottom, it's been moved around, secured, authenticated in some new and interesting way, but it will need to be consumed or used. And that's where we see new forms of machine learning, whether that's federated learning, or whether that's trying to bring the model to the data and staying encrypted, like multi-party computation. The specifics matter a lot less than the framing of this, which is to say, there will be new applications that will utilize this underlying computing stack, which we think will end up being open source. I'm using the word non-custodial very specifically to avoid using the word decentralized or peer-to-peer. And I'm still uncomfortable with the word non-custodial, but I don't think this whole stack is going to be decentralized in the way in which we as a group might think of how specific transactions are added to a blockchain and who has the right to authenticate those transactions. I don't think this will all end up being decentralized, but it will have certain features of non-custodialship. And fundamentally, privacy-preserving tools. Because what we ended up with was we've built an internet stack, which has been wildly successful for its original use case, and then extended out into use cases beyond imagination for which the underlying technology was never particularly suited for. One of the core challenges around that, as we've seen, is the consolidation of data at the application layer, leading to challenges in funding open source protocols. How do the open source protocols even get funded that are the backbone for billion dollar companies? So we need to think through what a new computing stack would look like and what are the problems that we can solve. Not just we are going to build a distributed ledger and it's going to be faster or more private than another and therefore people will use it. I think it's important that we think of this top layer. Why is this stack better? What are the values for the user, whether it's a business or a consumer? What are the values that this stack can enable, make life easier, or make life cheaper or faster, that the existing internet cannot? I think that's often a missing component. And one important thing is this isn't theoretical in the sense that we're putting money where our mouth is. So actually, we deployed money in this concept that is very likely wrong, but as long as it's not too far wrong, it shouldn't matter. We've invested in 20 or so businesses or networks in as many of those buckets as appropriate. And so, there are still missing ones, and maybe, storage or scaling, various things, but we're actually not just looking at this as an academic pursuit. We're looking at this as we genuinely think that by investing across this stack, we can get Sovereign to work with cosmos to work with Enigma. And we think that we can kind of take this bottom-up approach where instead of one company coming along and owning this stack and saying we're going to do everything from hardware processing to the ledger to the scaling to the authentication to the UX to the application and sort of owning that stack, instead what we can do is we can take a microservices approach or a best-in-class approach, which is to say build best-in-class and integrate with the other components. And that's kind of the approach we've taken. And I think the framing of this is what gets startups interested in it, in that they're sort of furrowing their own, to mix a metaphor, are they furrowing their own burrow? Furrowing something. They're doing their thing in their space. This is an emerging, I guess, technology computing stack for which certain things are more mature than others. Lots of this is missing the right tooling, the right documentation, and there's lots of things that are missing, but it's better for one company to focus on one thing that it is well positioned and incentivized to complete and to collaborate with others in different spaces. And I think this is a relatively unique take on the space. It means that we'll look at peer-to-peer networking businesses as part of this. We'll look at machine learning companies that are taking new approaches to open sourcing data. But more than an investment strategy, I think it's a really good, simple way to frame it, to be able to explain to policymakers, or I hope this is why I was asking some of my questions earlier, like what is the narrative, what is the story that to make this explainable to the average person, and to understand that you're not just making a policy on distributed ledger technology, because that ultimately impacts this larger thing that's happening. That's the core of it, the narrative that we want to tell, which is this is, we don't want to make the same mistake that we made with arguably unregulated internet, or not thinking through the larger framing of what happens when you amass a large amount of data. Instead, let's take a holistic approach and think, is this the right framework to think about anti-competition, for example? I mean, is it possible that we would say you can say be involved in the distribution of data, but you can't own elements of production? Maybe you can't have a consumer use case if you do parts of the distribution. I don't have any answers to that. I just think it's an interesting framework to look at competition. The last point I'll make, because hopefully it's important as researchers in the space and as academics from a technical perspective, and it's been mentioned by speakers as well, is that the explainability of this. We got another version of this which has 58 boxes, which obviously I'm not going to present. We got another version which is just production, distribution, and consumption, just three elements. And then I brought this one which is somewhere in the middle. But the point is we need to find ways to explain to the people that ultimately are going to use this why it makes their life easier, why it makes their life more convenient, and why this is valuable beyond just the conversations around it being more secure or more private or more decentralized, because I don't think they're the things that actually matter. That is me.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. I've got one question for you, if I may. I'll take Chairman's privilege. So when you're investing in these companies and you describe that narrative and you buy them into it, how do you advise them to sell their services then to the people who are going to pay for their services? What is it? How do you translate that narrative? We've heard there's a demand side problem. How do you advise your investees to deal with that?
So what is the go-to-market strategy? How to tell the story? Well, I think that's probably the key difference in this space is that, as I say, they're pioneers, they're early adopters, and therefore what resonates, the sorts of things they're looking for are very different from what the sorts of things that the corporates, like, for example, you know, we work with SAP or Deutsche Telekom or Shell. The sorts of questions they're asking are not, is the technology faster? or is the technology more private? They're saying, okay, what's the 24-month roadmap? Do we have internal talent that can code on this stuff? Who do we sue if things go wrong? They're very different questions to be asked. So there's this gap between how to sell to what enterprises are looking for today, why they would switch out one particular software system with another, and what consumers are looking for, and what consumers are being offered. So there's this huge gap. So your question originally was, how do we help them? The only thing that we're trying to do at the moment is simplify the story and focus on the value, not the technology. So stop talking about AI, blockchain, IoT, stop talking about the technology, decentralization, open source, try and focus on what is the ultimate value. And personally, I don't think that's actually privacy. I wish it was, but I don't think that resonates with consumers. So we need to find other ways to hook people that are going to adopt this technology later. It's an open question. We don't have an easy answer yet.
Great. I think we need to do that in government as well. Thank you very much. There will be opportunities to ask Lawrence questions when you are going to join the panel afterwards. Thank you very much. Just before we ask Anna.